Welcome to Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town from the world's number one poker community. Hey everybody, I'm your host, Robbie Straczynski. Thank you so much for joining us on episode number 128 of Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town. Today's guest is a successful, longtime professional poker player with four World Series of Poker bracelets and two WSOP circuit rings in his trophy cabinet, winning his bracelets in No Limit Hold'em, Pot Limit Omaha, Raz, and 7-card stud high-low. This player has been proficient in all forms of the game to the tune of almost $5 million in live tournament earnings alone. Not only that, but his name translates as the fisherman in his native tongue, and he's also known by his nickname, the Italian Pirate. It's Max Pescatori, and on today's show, we will get to know him a little better. Max, welcome to the Cards Chat podcast.
Thank you, and that was a beautiful introduction. Except for the fact that I expected to be in the first five of your podcasts instead of 128. What's wrong with you? I mean,
We're trying.
I forgive you because the introduction was so cool.
You're one of the first five Italians we've had on the show. I can tell you. Probably.
I better be.
I think you're the first official Italian. We have to check, but I think you're the first. I mean, that is a very cool nickname, the Italian Pirate. And, you know, I've been to Italy, but I don't think there's many pirates in Italy. So where exactly did that nickname come from?
It's one of the things that people don't know. There were real Italian pirates in the past. And okay. I had to research which one was the most famous. But I think it was Barbanera, Black Beard, was his, which, by the way, was my nickname on GG Poker when I started, Max Blackbeard, but then I switched to my real name because of you know, doing Twitch and
sure.
So it came because of one of the first tournament televised events that they were showing here in Vegas. One day I had my hair like crazy. I put like a bandana that was like an Italian flag. Mm-hmm. And I made a final table. So next day I say, I'm going to put it as a superstitious thing. I'm going to put it again. I made a final table and say, wow, I'm going to start putting it. And so in the show, someone mentioned it. And because bandana were associated a little bit with with pirates. So I say, and they started doing that.
And it just stuck. How about that?
That's interesting. Yeah. And, you know, it was actually a very good marketing move because then I remember, like, because of that, I didn't even win anything yet. And yet I was in the first Activision WSOP video game. And that's if so you, cool. like, look at the back in 2005, I didn't win even bracelet. Yet there was my picture with bandana because it was a character that it was cool to have in a video game. So for me coming from video games, being in a video game with it, it was a perfect marketing move.
It almost doesn't even matter what your nickname is. If you have a nickname, that means you're somebody. You know, it's like in the poker
world. True. That's true.
Very cool. Well, you've had quite a lot of success, as we mentioned in the intro, in your career, specifically at the World Series of Poker, those four wins and four separate poker variants. To me, and I think to a lot of players, that demonstrates that you're really a complete player, not just, you know, No Limit Hold'em. So I'm wondering, when you started playing poker originally, did you right away start playing all the different games, or was it just Hold'em and then a little PLO and then like the next one and the next one?
Well, I mean, my first real poker game was the ones that you see in the movies, 5 cards in my hand with a strip deck. So only 32 cards. We used to play four-handed, and I used to play in Italy that game, which it was by far the most popular game. We had a version that was kind of a 5-card stud where you start with one card covered and one card up.
Right.
And then you bet, then there is one card up until 5 cards.
Right.
So those maybe kind of opened my mind to different kind of games. And then when I came to Vegas, I started playing 7-card stud for a brief period of time. then went to limit hold'em because the pots were so much bigger. And seven card stud they used to play, but it used to be like really an old man game where yeah. people put like $1, but you couldn't win because the rake and everything. So like I kept watching, and it was at the Rio. Curiously, it was at the Rio that I keep seeing these gigantic pots of people like betting crazy, and they're like, one guy told me, that's the game that you should be in. So I like moved to that game and start playing limit hold'em, and then so on. I mean, from there, limit hold'em was my game. Then kind of I met one of the first Italian poker player that won a bracelet called Walter Farina. Mm-hmm. And he won it in seven card studs. So by becoming friends, sometime I sit behind him, watch him. So I played that game.
Right.
And then there was Omaha High Low for a while at the Mirage. They used to play that. So right. I kind of like play a little bit everything. No Limit was a game that came way after that I was already professional. So right. people don't even remember. But in 99, which that's when I turned pros, or at least I left my job to try to become pro. Mm-hmm. And that year I kind of broke even, so I didn't even make money. And actually for a while. But people don't remember, No Limit did not exist in any poker room. It was only in tournaments, and that's it. There was right. no cash game, No Limit. Instead, now it's almost there is no limit hold'em cash game. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the opposite. I mean, there is some, but
sure,
one out of 20 games, maybe.
Sure. So just to sort of bridge the gap a little bit, you said, you know, first you came to America, you had a job, and then you turned pro. Yeah. So what were you like? What is it that brought you from Italy to America in the first place? And what job did you have?
Well, I mean, I came here as I used to write on a magazine, several magazines in Italy, because there were all this platform of computer was Amiga. Mm-hmm. Was the, I don't know if you remember, you might be too young. Amiga was one of the computer. Then there was, you know, all the other ones, there were like a few of the other console games, mm-hmm. but I was specialized in Amiga, which was the most popular in Italy by far.
Okay.
And nothing. So I just test the video games, writing, and then what happened, there was a CES convention here in Vegas, the guy that was like above me said, let's go, you know, we like poker, you like poker, you like gambling, let's go, and we do that, we go to the company that was based here, I forgot the name now, but there was a big company, software company that was here. Uh-huh. And so we came, had a meeting, and at the same time, I like never went to the convention center. I just stayed in the poker room and the whole time. So I didn't get fired because I was getting paid so little anyway. But it was fun, and that's, you know. Then I stay here. Kind of was a crazy move to move here. And
wow, yeah.
And then I said I loved gambling so much. I said let me get the understanding, I'm going to dealing school and understand all the games. So uh-huh. then I dealt for a little bit casino games, and it was interesting. But then I would take early out right away, go play poker, and I soon saw that I was making more money playing poker than working. So I said, let's just do that.
Sure. And, you know, you clearly have some gamble in you to make moves like that in your life and to make those decisions. For sure. What was it that made you say, okay, I believe I can turn pro and literally make a living at this game instead of just something that I enjoy and, you know, okay, once in a while I have a good session?
So it was two different points. One was like this girl that I was dating, she told me that the previous boyfriend was a professional gambler, and I was saying, okay, but I don't even understand. What if he goes broke? The concept of a professional gambler that goes broke, I couldn't get through me. I'm mm-hmm. saying, what does he do, you know, if he goes to zero?
Right.
Which, okay, one, you can get a job. Second, if you're good enough, there is people probably who will stake you a lower games, and then you can build your way up. So there is two different things that you could do. And second one was I was going to the horseshoe playing at night. So I would get off my job, I go to the horseshoe playing at night.
And this is the old horseshoe in downtown, not the one on the strip. Yeah.
The old horseshoe downtown, dark, everybody smoked.
Yeah.
So I would play Limit Hold'em at night, and you know, one day, two, three, four, I kept racking. I mean, I kept cashing out racks of $1. And one guy says, you know, you should be a professional. And I'm like, what's a professional? And still, I couldn't understand it. And say, oh, what are you working for? So kind of went to my mind. And then slowly I start meeting like people and talking, and then end up saying, okay, I want to leave my job. But at the same time, you know, I stayed in very good terms with the casino manager and say, you know, hire me back if I
right, just do bad. In case.
And he said, yeah, you're great workers. And so whenever you want to come back, I'll get your job. And so, but it never happened. You
right.
know? Then I did get other jobs because by being a gambling expert, it's kind of easy to understand that people in the industry really don't know much. And so it's easy to get a consulting job because if you someone understand how much you know,
yeah,
then first they grow you as an individual, as a person that will actually do things in the company. But at the same time, you become essential because yes, people go to university, they get a master, but at the end, if you leave Vegas, if you
right.
are a gambling addict, but with a brain,
right,
then you understand that there is so much that you know compared to actually people in very good position. And
sure.
So you are, it's a perfect combination because
sure.
I can have my freedom, but at the same time working and helping things that they cannot know because they don't live it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So you started around like the late 90s, and I looked at the Hendon Mob, of course, you know, got to look at the Mac's Hendon Mob, and I see that your first tournament cash was in Reno in 2002. So before we get to that specific cash, what were those in, like, why did you not play any tournaments, or just, I know that there weren't that many tournaments to play, you know, it's not like today, but why were you sticking to cash games specifically?
So to me, I started playing cash. I didn't even really look at too much at tournaments. I mean, one of the things that I do remember is when I was watching the World Series every once in a while because they were doing in local news. And so, yes, there were some moments that I would look at that, but it wasn't something that, you know, there wasn't like too much. At the same time, I kept playing cash because it's kind of easier to make money in cash, but it was also where I was just before. I didn't even know what professional gambler is, so slowly I went to cash game, but there were not like every place a tournament.
Right.
But one day I remember I played with Man the Master, and boy, I was like, I'm so much better than him, and he's like a legend. Why am I not doing that and moving there? So, you know, started a little bit playing online and things like that. And it happened like I used to play in this, I don't remember if it was Ultimate Bet.
Okay.
I believe it was Ultimate Bet. And so kind of playing, and those, there were qualifiers to go into places. I went to Aruba to play. In fact, there is like one of the events, but also started meeting a few people that were playing tournaments. I met Jennifer Harmon that played tournaments. So we kind of talk about it a little bit and then say, okay, let me go to Reno, play some tournament, get some experience. And that's how I got into it.
Interesting.
And then it was interesting because then there were, you know, online poker affiliates. So it became like something that it was interesting. I think if I would have started 3-4 years earlier, I would have had a head start on many things, but at the same time, I also start very early, so
sure.
I can't really complain of what I did because, you know. But
right. Well, when I mentioned Reno in 2002, you had a smile on your face right away. So you remember this tournament that you cashed in was a crazy pineapple high low. So how did you end up in that
first
tournament?
Cash in my
It was a $100 buy event.
Yeah, it was a nighttime, and it's very funny, but that's, you know, my aptitude of playing different games was already showing on what I was catching.
Right.
You know, it was just, they had all kinds of weird games, and I played that one. Was the first time I cashed and made a final table. But Reno was like really the first trip. And then when I came back there, I won like two tournaments in 3 days. Yeah. And that was big because, of course, I realized later, but someone told me right away, you know, it's not going to happen very often to win two tournaments. So, you know,
in a
back
row,
to back.
Also, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, back to back. So it's very weird what happened. And then I kind of got hooked up into tournaments and, you know, still play cash games, but at the same time, tournaments were interesting. Yeah. I don't know if I made the right move because cash games, they are, let's say, if there was no sponsorships, cash game is the way to go. With sponsorship and everything, it became clear that playing tournaments, becoming a good name in the poker world was more interesting and better at that point.
Right. Well, let's get back a little bit sort of to those, the moves that you decided to make. I mean, anyone who goes and moves halfway around the world, that's not an easy decision, even if it makes a lot of sense and what, you know, you're pursuing poker as a career, but you've got family up until then, everything you knew was back home in Italy. Was it sort of difficult to be far away? And how often do you sort of go back? You've been there for what, 25 years almost, or maybe 30 years?
Here now?
Yeah, well, you've
now,
been to Las Vegas
I still go all the time.
Okay.
The first years I didn't go, but first of all, financially, it was difficult to move. And and also I wasn't organized, so I didn't really go much.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, after a while, and the last 10 years I've been many times there. I was also lucky because Italy was the first country that like kind of legalized poker and put set up rules. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got a phone call. I was a full tilt pro. I got a phone call from Italy and say, hey, come here. We'll pay a bunch of money. And, so I was like testimonial. We did commercials. I mean, if you look at YouTube, there is like really some cool commercial that we did.
Mm-hmm.
I went to so many shows in Italy with like, actually, they became all famous after they interviewed me. So, I can probably see you on Fox News soon. BBC. I don't know which one is from your country.
In Israel? Well, we see a lot of stuff, that's for sure. Okay. So like you said, you know, it's clear which choice you had to make as far as tournaments or cash games, as far as if you're pursuing money or fame. But, you know, you're not like you said, you know, your prowess in non-hold'em games and all of the games was evident very quickly. Which is your favorite mixed game variant to play?
I like Raz and Stud High Low as my favorites because I think it's kind of, I really feel comfortable. And I think people do not feel comfortable in those games. So they're games that they're fast. I don't really like too slow games. So those are games that I really like. But in general, if I play cash game, I like to play 10 games, 15 games, 20 games.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of more fun for me.
Got it. Okay.
In tournaments, I have to say everything has an appeal because no limit, even if I despise it in a cash game, has beautiful appeal in a tournament because of the blinds going up, all the scenario of knocking out. There are so many variables. And even now with the mystery bounty, even more, it adds to the equation. It's beautiful because, first of all the people that I really don't like, oh no, you have to raise 1.72, not 1.7. Come on, give me a break. I mean, those just crazy no limit player, it completely changed. They cannot do this in a mystery bounty. It completely changes the dynamics. So it's kind of, they put a variable, which is beautiful, which is an equalizer, also makes the gambling factor completely different. So I think it's a great invention. I think and hope it's one of the best inventions that they had in an Unlimited. So bounty tournaments and mystery bounties are my favorites now. And of course, in World Series is different because there is all the mixed game. And it's beautiful. World Series, since you asked me why my success at the World Series, first of all, is because I love the variety. One day I play one team, one day I play another, one team I play another one. And the other thing is, people come to the World Series, even they don't play one game, they play because they're the World Series. So it's beautiful. The value, it's immense.
Yes, for sure. That's a good way of putting it, yes.
It's great. Even if I lost a bunch of money this year because I lost like 65,000, but because I play the higher limit. So, of course, if you play a $25,000 buy-in, you cash, you are up for the summer, you lose, you're down 25K. So those change everything. But overall... Sure. That's why I love the World Series, because even when No Limit was incredibly popular and Bellagio took out all the games that they were not No Limit, and all the other ones kind of follow what Bellagio did, World Series never did. World Series kept to their task to say, we are the World Series, we're the World Championship, we have to have many games.
Right.
And that's what I loved about them, and that's why I continue to kind of even play less tournaments, but World Series, I want to be there.
Because of the reason. Well, we'll definitely ask some more World Series questions. I've got some of those up my sleeve for you. But I want to ask, obviously the overwhelming majority of poker players, if they know any game, it's probably Texas Hold'em. What sort of... tips or encouragement could you give someone who's never tried mixed games before to say, hey, these could be fun? Like, what would be your encouraging words?
Well, first of all, I would say buy Super System 2 and read it. Even if it's a book that came out, 15 years ago, it's still a game, a book that tells you a lot of the games that they are in the mix, and they're all written by good or great players.
Sure.
Some that they are good players, but great teachers. So it's a perfect book to start. There is Stud High Low, right by my friend Todd. There is Daniel wrote the Deuce of Seven section. Then there is... Mark Gregorich wrote the Omaha High Low, which was a regular in the Omaha High Low. Even if he didn't sign it, someone else signed it. I don't remember who it was. Kind of like all the games are covered, that they're not the crazy new games, but that's a really good book to start.
Mm-hmm.
And then see if you can play somewhere, because it depends on the sites that you play. There is many places that you can play mix.
Sure.
For sure, if someone approaches now and say, what should I play, poker? I would say Pot Limit Omaha. That's the game that you should play.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's more fun for recreationals. In Europe, there is more Pot Limit Omaha games than No Limit.
Yeah.
There is no doubt about it. And this trend will keep growing. I believe No Limit, for many reasons, will kind of slow down, not in tournaments, but in cash game, and Pot Limit Omaha will keep going up.
The game
and
of
in Vegas,
the future.
It's not that way. Well, it's the game of the present.
Of the present.
The game here, I don't know, because, but still, it's a fun game. It's more fun for someone is a fish or a businessman, and it's more fun to play more combination, more things.
Okay. Well, let's go back to your, that trophy case that I mentioned in the introduction. We'll go back 17 years. The first time you ever won a bracelet in 2006, you beat Mike Madisel to win the gold. At that point, it's 2006. So you've been playing professionally for 7, 8 years, something like that, maybe a little longer, close to 10 years. What is Max Pescatore's life like in 2006? And how did it change, if it changed, in 2006 once you won the bracelet?
It didn't change much. I didn't go out and buy like a I didn't go out buy a house. I didn't go out buy a crazy car. I didn't change much. I kind of kept to my task of being a professional and keep going in those in that direction. I had internet website before there was even any rule. I had a skin in Italy that I started a year before, and it was stolen to me 1 week after that I wanted my bracelet by my best friend at the time. So it was just weird. But I was trying to move in the poker world, and I saw like an opportunity in Italy that then changed. So I was doing things to over the only not only in the poker played but in other things. So I actually started Car Player Italy not much longer. So I had it for 8-9 years. I had a website, I had a magazine. It was if you look at Car Player Italy online, you probably can find Car Player Italia. You probably can find all the covers that we had. But it was fun, but it was a lot of work, and it was just, you know, not a, maybe a good investment, but at the same time, it kind of helped me in different directions to move in the Italian market. So,
Got it. And how about just sort of personally, did it feel like, you know, some extra validation that you didn't have before? Maybe people give you a little more respect, or like you said, was it just, well, you knew that it was eventually coming. It was a matter of when.
No, I didn't know. But there is a nice story about that, too, because when I started playing tournaments, my cash bankroll wasn't gigantic, because I've always been someone that spend money. Like, I like spending money and going to good restaurants. So I kind of, like, leave the money that I made. So my bankroll wasn't huge. So my idea was, okay, let me find someone that will take me in tournaments. And so I was little bit friend with Todd Bronson before, so I asked him, you know, do you want to stake me? And he say okay at the time, you know. So he starts taking me in tournaments, and we had a deal which he was in all in his favor, but played, and so I start going to tournaments and play, and pretty much he staked me until 2006 before the World Series.
Okay.
And he staked me almost, you know, in a lot of tournaments and with makeup. And I practically broke even for like 3 years, which was damaging for my bankroll because I was playing less cash game.
Sure.
And then they were serious. He told me, oh, you know, there is Doyle's room and my, you know, we're going to have 10 pros. And I talked to my father and, you know, he wants to be sponsor you and also put you into the tournament, the World Series. And I say, of course. Yeah. So we finish our deal. You just play for those.
Oh, boy.
The third tournament that I play, I win 680,000.
That's variance for you.
With $2,500.
Wow.
And so it was like, oh. So it was just funny that happened. And I remember Doyle coming to the final table after I won to like shake my hand.
Wow.
And wow. Also take the money.
Right, of course. Right, of course. But wow, that's an interesting one. I mean, I wasn't planning on asking this one till later, but since you had mentioned Todd and how you first met him and, you know, how you first got connected with him, eventually you went into business together and you're co-owners of Roma Deli. What made you decide to do that and to go into business together as partners, and why the restaurant business?
If I invent a time machine, I will go back and not do that. Not because of Todd, but because of the other partner that we had before. We only had problems, and many people told me, don't buy a restaurant. I shouldn't have. So we didn't do that. And now I'm a small partner, only with Todd. It's more for fun. It's not for fun for him because he has the most percentage. But yeah, I mean, it's a way to stay connected as friends. But you told me something that you asked me a question that I didn't answer was, do people like give you more respect after that you win a tournament?
Yeah.
So it wasn't that. It's the fact that by winning it, by with Doyle's room,
uh-huh.
and with Doyle, the thing is after, you know, like they will go, let's say the World Series next year,
uh-huh.
they will go to dinner break. And I would go to dinner break with Doyle and Chip and Todd. So, like, I'm there with, like, legends to have dinner. Mm-hmm. So, of course, that would put me in the eyes of everybody else.
Right.
On a different light.
By association. Yeah.
By association. Mm-hmm. I won. And after I'm having dinner with Chip and Doyle, and, you know, and they were always so nice. And Todd, of course. Mm-hmm. But, you know. So, yes, that kind of changed the way they looked at me. But I was already a Las Vegas professional, respected. Okay. So, you know, now it's probably the new guys of Notre Dame. Nobody knows, but it's a different right. story. But it's normal.
Well, unfortunately, you know, we all know Doyle's no longer with us. But, you know, so much talking about him. Is there any fun stories or memorable stories you'd like to share of him?
Well, I mean, I was proud of the fact that, of course, Doyle couldn't go around the World Series. If you see some videos of the World Series, they're all chasing him all the time to try to take a picture. And at one point, I think he could walk, no problem, but he would drive a scooter so he can like zoom away from people.
That way.
because if not, he would never reach a bathroom. You know, a bathroom break, it would take him like 45 minutes because they wouldn't, you know, pitch up. Plus, he, of course, in an environment like that, he's trying to be nice. But one thing that was made me proud is he would like zoom everywhere you see him. If he saw me, he would like break and start chatting with me.
That's nice.
And then people would come there, you know, and it was cool because I don't want to bother him. Actually, I don't even remember if I have a picture with him.
Wow.
Because of...
No kidding.
You know, I didn't... No, kind of feel... Someone is a friend that kind of like don't do the... You know.
Right.
And
this is before selfies were a big deal, right? So
right. It is before selfies were a big deal, but, you know, through the years, and I mm-hmm. kept seeing him. But that was like one thing, and it was funny, like, zoom away, leave me alone. No, he wouldn't say leave me alone, but he's zooming away from people, but then he would like break.
Wow, unbelievable.
And start talking. So that made me feel better. Sure. You know, good.
And you mentioned, of course, Chip Reese, the late Chip Reese. You know, I can't help but also ask, what stories about Chip can you share with us?
I don't have much except for the fact that he always had a smile. And he was always extremely courteous with me, even if I was just a young kid trying to keep not really a kid, but kid compared to him, because I was 20 plus year difference, I think, approximately. But he was extremely nice to me, you know, and when the few times that, you know, we had dinner or chat with him after. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't remember specific things except for that, but that was actually good because, you know, he was considered the one of the best players in the world at that point, and also legendary, you know, in many ways. So, you know, people don't remember, but so that, you know, after Chip passed, they actually changed the 50K, which was the mixed game tournament that everybody wanted to win, into his name. So, sure. I mean, that's trophy, the legacy that he had. So
right.
That was how important and well-respected he was in the poker community.
For sure. Okay, and back to Max's success. We talked about bracelet number one. 2 years later, you win bracelet number two, and that's in Pot Limit, Omaha. This is 2008. So you talked about, I guess, to a degree, the difference that winning bracelet number one made. How about number two? Did that feel better because it was, I don't know, in PLO, or did it feel different in any way?
It felt, I mean, the first one was such an explosion of joy that was, you know, I can probably never feel again. Although I felt it similar to the fourth bracelet that I won. You know, but the second one was more, okay, that means I'm good. Because one, anybody can win one. But winning two, it's already like
that's not a
percentage
fluke.
Of people that win two, then you're like much lower. Okay, maybe I'm good. And so, yeah, that's how I felt. And also because of the how I dominated the table, I really, really was one of those days that I was like in the zone, that probably had the players that they were not. Maybe a good matchup, but it was completely domination. So, I mean, I remember even when I went all in, I was, 90% in Omaha.
Wow.
And so it was just not only I kept winning the chips, and it was half pot limit Omaha, half pot limit Hold'em, that tournament.
Ah, okay.
But I completely dominated the Omaha because everybody played Hold'em, and I felt like in Omaha they didn't know as much as, you know, I did the game. So that was the good thing. And I remember I had, there was this bar. So the table was like here. And then there was this bar that was like very high. Mm-hmm. And there was like a bunch of people that could stay on top. And there were all my friends staying on top. And well, since Formula One is coming to Vegas, do you like ever watch Formula One when the car arrives and everybody's like leaning over?
Of course.
Felt that way. I went like indicated them and they were all like, ah! Exactly like a Formula One finish.
That's cool.
So it was very cool. And of course, everyone has, every bracelet has a moment.
Yeah.
And that one was my personal moment. I remember the friends like
beautiful.
Cheering me.
Beautiful. Well, Max, you know, in poker, it's important to change gears. So we'll change gears just a little and ask you something a little away from poker, more on the personal side. You and I, we had a chance to play together a few months ago. And I remember you showed me a picture of some artwork that you were either, I don't remember if you bought it or you were thinking of buying it. You know, what exactly does art mean to you? Do you enjoy going to museums and, you know, seeing sculptures, music? What is art's role in your life?
Well, let's start who I despise. Those crazy people that go and glue their hands into, you know, a Monet.
Yeah.
I mean, no matter what, respect what people have done in life. Mm. You know, art is art and you have to respect it. So, no, I don't like, there is some art that I don't like, but there is, you know, whatever, you know, it's not for everybody. So, I mean, coming from Italy, there is, of course, so many museums, so many great, you know, legendary. I mean, we talk about legend in poker, but we have like, you know, people that have done so much in the art world. And I mean, my favorite might be Giotto, which I don't know if you know him or
not.
I'm
not familiar.
Well, Giotto was famous because the legend said that when he went to an, they were I don't know if the paint is the right word, but let's say there was an audition to who will paint the inside of Florence, and the Duomo of Florence, and all these painters came and like show their beautiful art, and Giotto, the legend said that Giotto went there. And with just not a paper, but something that
the canvas
to draw a canvas.
Yeah.
Yes, sorry, my
sure, English. It's fine.
A canvas, and he just took a brush and painted a circular perfect ring.
Sure. Okay. Wow.
So, by bare hands, he just painted a circular ring. They looked at it, and it was perfect. And they say, okay, if he can do that, then, okay, you got the job.
Interesting.
And that's a
okay.
famous Giotto, which was my also one of my first pet. I call them John. So, yeah, I mean, Italy, we study, we have a lot of things that, you know, we go to museum with. It's one of the big art country in the world. Sure. So, of course, you know, I have few paintings that I like. I actually just posted one on Instagram that I bought in Reno 15 years ago. So by a local painter, but yeah, I do like it. And I see you have an artwork in the back of
that's my daughter. Here, I'll show everyone.
That's okay.
That's my daughter made that. She's my artist. She's very good.
So you're obligated to put it there.
Of course. You know what? I don't normally do this, but since you asked, here's another work from my daughter over there.
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, she's very talented. She's cool. 15 years old.
Ah, cool. Yeah, nice. So, in general, of course, being Italian, I have to like painting. And I don't remember which one I showed you. It might have been one from...
It was black and white, I remember specifically. There was like a lot of lines, like swirls, sort of. I don't know how to explain it. I'm not well-versed in it.
Yeah, I don't remember which one it was or which conversation we were having. So, but it could be that I maybe... just came across and say, wow.
It struck me. I was like, oh, interesting. I have to ask about that. Well, you mentioned Instagram. I want to ask about a different social media platform of yours, Twitter. There's a specific tweet from just a little while back that I wanted to highlight. You had some major praise for a WSOP dealer. You said, this is Tracy. And she's like, she's the perfect dealer, the perfect thing you could possibly say. And it was just unbelievable. And obviously this kind of went like mini viral and retweets and likes and something.
Unbelievable, yeah.
In an age when so many people, so many players, both their recreational players, professional players, usually they use Twitter to complain. But you used your platform for genuine positivity. So where does that come from?
Okay. I don't know. I mean, Twitter is definitely the platform that I like the most since Elon Musk took over. There is nothing that I like better than Twitter because you can post whatever you want. It's free and everything without going into politics.
Sure.
There is no, unless you're threatening someone, you can post your point of view. For some reason, I mean, I'm always, because of the years that I spent in Italy, and I was sponsored by a company that we also organize live events. We used to be called the Poker Grand Prix. So when I go there, I actually never had success in that tournament format. And one of the reasons is I try to be a perfectionist and tell the dealers, no, you need to do this, you need to do that, you need to do that. In fact, my girlfriend, which is my girlfriend from Italy that used to deal, she used to tell me that I'm the terror of the dealers. Because first of all, I was very important in the company because I was the face of the company and, you know, and people love me and all the management. But also because I would like, if something happened, I would like really get upset without disrespect. But, you know, unfortunately, I dealt before, not poker, but, and I know that there is a style. In Italy, croupier, which is dealer, always had an amazing style. You go and they had like a way of taking the chips.
It's like it's always watching an artist with the cards. Exactly. Yeah, it's very exactly. Interesting. Yeah.
So why becoming sloppy as a dealer? Why dealing and hate everybody? Because a lot of dealers hate the players, but it's if you instead you have a positive attitude, and it's easy for me to say, but no, it's not. You know, I would do the same in any job. Mm-hmm. I would try to do my best in any job. And unfortunately, one of the things that I learned a long time ago is that in Vegas, for example, when you apply as a dealer, if you have too much experience, they don't want you. Why? Because a lot of dealers become sloppy. Mm-hmm. They start doing things what they want instead of what they're taught.
Right.
So I wrote something. And see, if you look, it might have not been, you might have missed the other one.
Okay.
I was playing the main event, and at one point, there is a big pot. And this dealer was with the right hand having the deck.
Right.
Or maybe it was the left hand having the deck. Yeah, left hand went in the deck. And with the right hand had the muck, and he was spreading the muck, and then picked it up. Then spreading it, then picked it up. So I took a video of that, put it on the internet, and say, please, WSOP, tell dealers not to do this.
Right.
Because I've seen many dealers doing that. They play with the muck, which is something that they're not supposed to. They can expose a card. Sure. I mean, can you imagine the guys thinking to call because he thinks the other guy has a king, and we're playing with, you know, potentially $20,000, $50,000
life-changing
theoretical money. And he shows the king, and then a guy calls.
Yeah.
So I wrote that, and I did the video by just zooming on his hand without showing who he was, because I didn't want to shame the dealer. I was just, I got so many insults because of that.
Oh.
And I was, and a lot of people also, like, you know, took my sides. But I was like, why am I getting insulted? I didn't, like, do anything. And I tried to answer, but people just... extremely mean. So a few days later, I was in a better state of mind, and I see this dealer. And the dealers that I love the most are the ones that you don't even realize they're there. It's always been like that.
Yeah.
In a tournament, you know, in a cash game, it might be a little bit different because there is a little bit of entertainment, but in a tournament, you don't need to know that it's there.
Right.
And she was just, I watched everything that she does. And she was just perfect. And, you know, a guy screamed at her. She looked with no hostility and said, no, you know, this is the right way. And he said, oh, okay, you're right.
Wow.
So there's no reason to fight. And and so it was crazy how viral it went. And, you know, and I was happy for her because then I showed it to her. Right. And she was like, you
that
know,
was beautiful.
Very embarrassed. But yeah, I mean, why not put him things on Twitter, you know, the
right.
thing that I like most is do a random act of kindness to like, a stranger. That's a good thing. Holding a door, and those are things in our society they will improve. If everybody today, someone else might do another one, etc., etc. So
for sure,
you know, yes, it was beautiful that it went so viral, and I didn't expect almost 1,000 likes, which is crazy.
Well, that's a beautiful thing. And
I don't get 1,000 likes if I win a bracelet.
Well, that's good. It's always good to showcase, you know, genuine positive things.
And I'm someone that sometimes fights with dealers. You know, I had one guy that was crazy against me this year. I had the whole table. I had to go to the floor and say that the dealer is way out of line.
Right.
And, you know, it happens. Things happen, but it finishes there. You know,
of course.
If you have a discussion, next time you see, okay, hi. It's kind of like a referee. You know,
right?
Yeah, you know, you shouldn't like hold grudges.
Right. So on the more positive side, also, you know, we call ourselves the friendliest poker podcast in town. Can you name perhaps the friendliest player you've ever played against at the felt?
I don't know. That's a very tough question. I don't know because I don't see many players that being bad or anything. I mean, some players are not good, you know, in a way with dealers and everything. But at the same time, a player needs to be friendly. If he's a professional, you need to be friendly because it's part of your job. If you have a hostile environment or not talking to, here we go. There is the perfect concept. Why I think No Limit is going to way slow down.
Okay.
Because all the internet players that became so good, they're also the ones that hold headphones, don't talk to anybody. As soon as the two players, businessmen get up, they don't even play one more hand.
Yeah, they'll sit out. Yeah.
You know, that's just crazy. Instead, you have to entertain. You have to. That's what in mixed game has always been. You know, if someone is a doctor, is a lawyer, and he comes there because he finished working and he wanted to spend 4 hours. Doesn't matter. He might be twice as smart as you, not in poker, but give him respect. Don't make fun of him because he makes a bad check raise. That's insane. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, okay, if they come at Roma Deli, someone orders, well, I'm going to have the lobster. And I'll be like, you know how much we charge? How much we spend for a lobster to make? You're a fish. That's so stupid. No, why would you do that? You know, if the guy wants a lobster and pay three times as much as what is our food cost, let him have that and actually be extra nice to him.
That's a in great poker, example. Sometimes
people forget.
I love that. That's a great example. Wonderful. Well said. So just want to get another couple questions from you before we end this one off. You know, Max, we talked, you've been playing for quite a long time, over two decades. You've seen the initial poker boom. You've seen things scale back. And now you've seen this resurgence again, you know, over 10,000 people in the main event, poker rooms packed everywhere throughout the summer. In what way does what's going on now feel similar to that those boom years? And in what way does it feel different?
Well, the difference is that internet poker, it's less of a play compared to what it was before. So I think the boom was this, when they had the real boom was because of internet poker. I mean, everybody says moneymaker. I disagree with that. That was TV and combined with online poker, then sponsorship and all that. Yeah, that was a turning point, but it had nothing to do with, you know, of what happened. Now it's a little bit different. There is a boom, and I don't even get why, but the reason is just people love to play and love the competition. So, and I think overall, World Series had done a tremendous job. To mention others, Stars for the last 6-7 years was horrendous online, and now they finally seem to understand that you can't just take all your poker players and drag them to the casino business. You have to cultivate both. And this is what happens when a company hires people that, as we said at the beginning, they are extremely good and successful in the business world, in company, but they don't know the basics of gambling. And so they say, oh, casino is where we make the money. Let's put them all there. Forget about poker players. And they lost a gigantic amount of players. Now they're doing something better, you know. So they're, and actually I'm going to be at EPT Barcelona for the first time in 10 years. So I'm excited to go there and see and give them a little bit of a chance. And hopefully they'll move. And all this is also because there is another great player, which is GG Poker, which changed again the online world, because they are the full tilt of 10 years ago or 15 years ago. They are so good from everything that they do. And so now they're going to enter. I mean, there is already like some sponsor, like and maybe they will enter more the live tournaments with sponsorship and everything. So, you know, this excitement.
Competition is definitely a good thing.
Oh, yeah. When Stars bought Full Tilt Software, that was like a dark moment in you know, and they actually ran into the ground. It was terrible when they bought it. So, yeah, I mean, I think the future of poker is bright, and hopefully we'll stay out of all the AI bullshit, which I hate, and we'll go on. And that's why it's good to have mystery bounty or bounties or things different.
Right.
Because it doesn't become a chess game. I mean, can you imagine if a chess was mystery chess bounty? There you go. I got the idea for you. You know, okay.
Depends which pawn you take. Yes.
Yeah, I take a pawn, but under there is a five. Okay, that's worth more than, well, it's like the rook. So now who's going to win? You know, I'm a five. You took a rook. We're 5-5.
Nice. So, very cool. So two more for you, Max. You went from two bracelets to four, winning two in the summer of 2015. This past summer, Josh Aurier went from four to six. So it seems like, you know, if you look at trends, you look at poker long enough over the years, a lot of poker pros either do or don't have momentum from time to time. So I'm wondering, from your experience and obviously your extensive knowledge of the game, how much of tournament poker success boils down to variance and volume, and how much is all about you improving your game and, you know, getting the edge on your opponents?
I mean, both, a combination of everything. The fact that someone is able to win two in a row. I saw a guy that I didn't know. I don't actually remember his name. They won two tournaments this year, two mixed tournaments. He was at my table.
Oh, Chad Eveslid, the dealer's choice?
Yeah, he won two tournaments. He was at my table, I believe, in the horse, 3,000. I was looking at him like, the hell is he doing? And really, like, he must have made, I don't know, 10 plays that I was like, what are you doing? Just completely. But the point is, he's overconfident, he's over-aggressive, which is perfect for tournaments. And so he will push every edge. So he was playing exploit poker into mixed games. Huh. And, you know, that's how he gets big stack and then explode into a victory. Hmm. Because then it becomes like, you know, very difficult to play in many decisions, many points. And that's what he was doing. And so Josh has always been different. I felt always Josh, which he was at my table the first, I believe he won the bracelet on my first WSOP final table that I ever made, which was a Pablo Minoma tournament. I remember I believe he won the tournament, and there was Eric Seidel in the table, there was him. And I remember that's the first time I saw Josh. But right. I always saw Josh as someone which has an overall game, which is not crazy, not just more mathematical thinking, or just closer to my game now, not then, because I was just, you know, beginner. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy for Josh, which I've been using his site this year, Poker Stake, for putting up some of my things. It's worked well. They're associated with GG, so it's perfect.
And it brings more money into the poker ecology. It's good. Gives everyone a rooting interest. It's a very good thing to have poker.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I mean, I always thought years ago, I said, when I was at the Horseshoe still, I said, why don't the Horseshoe put up, I mean, can you imagine if you go to the World Series, I want to play a tournament, I post the 10,000 days before, and then say I'm selling at 120. And then at the sports book, you can just go to the sports book and say, okay, instead of, okay, let me pick 1% of him, and you go to the sports book window, betting window, and you bet on the players.
Right.
That would be perfect. They have many more players, and that would be a great way to improve the pool in a tremendous way. They can also hold directly the money. When you win, there is no problems of, you know, no, you won 57% of the prize pool. All for tax purposes is all perfect. Whoever wins has the tickets. It would be over. So he's doing that with the site. It's not the first one that came out, but it's very good software. So I like it. And to go back to streaks, yes, I believe that winning makes you win more. When you're doing bad, your mind keeps telling, oh my God, I'm so unlucky and things like that. So that's why it's very hard for people that go bad, and then they have no bankroll to go back up because of the confidence. And that's why if you look at the first 50 top players in the world as money that they made, they're probably all narcissists and think that they're the best players in the world. But that's because you have to kind of, in our business, think that way. Because if not, it's too depressing if you play tournaments.
Right.
So.
And my last one for you is, Max, and obviously the game has changed so much, you know, since you started playing. And yet, you know, you've remained a successful pro. You're 52 and you're destined to stand the test of time in poker. Have you given any thought to what you would like your legacy in poker to be? And perhaps even beyond poker, what would you like for that to be?
I mean, in Vegas, I'm known, but, you know, I was nominated. I had the chance to be nominated in to go in the Hall of Fame, but that's never going to happen probably again. I might get a chance again because of popularity, especially in Italy. But, I mean, I can tell you I'm very proud of what the work that we've done in Italy to grow the game. Mm-hmm. There is so much poker. And, you know, if I go in a taxi in Italy, often taxi driver know who I am because of advertisement. Yeah, and for how many things we've done to promote the game. I mean, in Italy, Disney called me up, local Disney, they called me up to did a video of Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Because Star Wars had in Solo, I don't know if you remember them, if you watch it.
Yeah, sure, I've seen it,
Okay, right. In Solo, there is a game that they play Sabacc.
Okay.
So at one point, they tell the story about how he lost the ship. And so there is, you know, we did commercials with me, with all the aliens, and where I explained Sabacc in Italian. And it was
so
pretty
cool.
If you see it on Instagram, you still have it. Wow. So the thing is, we did so many things to improve the game that I'm proud that people understand the game, but we also did it in a way to say, you know, don't just gamble, try to make a little bit of money. I always told people, be a semi-professional, keep a job and make extra money with poker. Don't just be a professional. That will come if you're a monster, but that's not for everybody. It's one out of 500, maybe, poker player that approaches the game.
Right.
So, you know, and my legacy in Italy, it's always going to be important because of that, because of being so popular in the poker world.
Sure. Well, Max, thank you very much for joining us. And thank you all for tuning in once again to another episode of Cards Chat. Guys, if you want this conversation to continue, well, guess what? You're in luck. We've got even more Max Pescatori for you in the form of questions from our community exclusively on the Cards Chat YouTube channel. So head on over to YouTube, check that out. And don't forget, you can always submit questions for our guests yourself over at the Cards Chat Poker Forum. Please be sure to give us a good review on iTunes and spread the word via your social media channels if you like the show. Until next time, I'm Robbie Straczynski, and you can follow me on Twitter at CardPlayerLife. I wish you all a wonderful day. Cards Chat, the friendliest poker podcast in town from the world's number one poker community.